Ezekiel Elliott. And he's got an opening. Elliott off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown. 85 yards.
It's so easy to be average. It takes a little something to be special, Don. It takes a little something special to be a great player.
Braxton Miller's loose. Spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when we get him on the run once, we're going to keep him on the run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on the run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today, we're going to win.
Menace to... What a weekend of college football in the Midwest. And that was, I'll tell you, it was an eventful weekend, wasn't it?
Finally.
I mean, and not only that, there was some drama, obviously. There was some letdowns. I know the SEC top tier played really well. They had a good weekend. The rest of the SEC absolutely shit the bed.
Top tier, like Tennessee, right? No. Top tier.
Certainly not Tennessee. But we're going to talk about the top performers in the Midwest and want to kind of update you on where we're at. We're waiting on iTunes and Spotify and all them to approve the feed for this podcast, this show, the Menace to the Midwest show. So in the meantime, we're going to put it on our Menace to Society feed so you can listen to it. And then hopefully tomorrow, by the time this drops publicly, that feed should be available. So search for it. Menace to the Midwest is the podcast show. And so go on there, subscribe, so you can listen to this show as well as the Menace to Society show that we've been doing now for 25 episodes. But let's take a look at the Midwest top performers. Obviously, we're going to jump into Ohio State here in a minute and analyze that game and the top performers of that game. But outside of Ohio State, there were some people that went off this weekend, for sure.
For sure.
The big debate right now, right, or at least leading into the season, was Shea Patterson and Justin Fields. And obviously, Justin Fields played extremely well, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But Shea Patterson played excellent as well. Both of them graded out in the top four quarterback performances of the weekend in the country. Shea Patterson was fourth. Justin Fields was first. And, he went 17 to 29, over 200 yards, three touchdowns, had like a 151 QBR, really, really played well. And I know his receivers played well, too. So that was a big, big game for Shea and Michigan.
I don't think it really separated anything. I think there's still Shea Patterson, Justin Fields. You don't know who's really the better quarterback at this point.
Certainly not. I mean, FAU and Middle Tennessee. I know this. Michigan did. It was similar performances. I mean, Michigan beat Middle Tennessee 40 to 21. Ohio State beat FAU 45 to 21. Yeah. I mean, very, very similar. You know, it was game one, QB one, week one. Nothing to get too shot in the ass about, but
they're all playing against the same team pretty much.
Yeah, I mean,
they had the same opponent.
Some of them. Penn State played Idaho, and that was not on the same level. 79-7. That was ridiculous.
Yeah. I just meant Michigan and Ohio State.
Maryland played Howard.
Right. I mean, but I'll tell you this. You know who else had a game, and he's already been called a Heisman candidate, preseason Heisman hopeful?
Jonathan Taylor.
Jonathan Taylor, Wisconsin, was ridiculous. I mean, he graded out 84%. On the game, he had 18 touches for 183 yards and four touchdowns.
He looked like Saquon out there.
He was ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
I mean, he had over 10 yards every time he touched the ball. On average, he had six runs of more than 10 yards, which leads the Big Ten right now. And he definitely had a game for him. And South Florida is a good defense. I know it was 49-0, but if it was 49-0 because of Jonathan Taylor. Yeah. He had a game. And you know who else was impressive? I don't know. I had to go back and watch the highlights and break those down because I could not watch the whole game. And it's 79-7 trouncing of Idaho by Penn State. But the freshman they have, Devin Ford, man, is he explosive. He only had six carries and went for over 100. Had 107 yards, one touchdown. He averaged 17.8 yards per carry. And I get it. I know it's Idaho. People say, yeah, it's Idaho, though. Yeah, well, Ohio State played FAU. Michigan played Middle Tennessee State. So that is a big, big performance from him. So I'm excited to watch him play this year. The other guy who everyone expects to go off and did go off is Rondale Moore. I know Purdue lost. I know they looked bad against Nevada. But he had 11 catches, 124 yards, and a touchdown. He played extremely well. And it was obviously very disappointing. They're Purdue's quarterback did not play well. And I guess credit to Nevada, 31-34, they pull off the win.
I was talking to somebody earlier this weekend after that. Nevada's not a terrible program. I mean, they're an 8-win program most years. They're not bad, but Purdue should have beat them.
My favorite thing, I don't know if it was during the game or on the highlights, and one of the comment, and I should do an entire segment on how commentators pissed me off because there's so many. But I mean, one of the guys said, like, he was talking about something about Nevada, the players they have, and how they were this relative unknown. And he was like, I promise, I bet you couldn't name one quarterback to play at Nevada.
One quarterback?
And I was like, excuse me, bitch?
A quarterback?
There was one that was in the Heisman race a few years back.
And not only that, but like, he's in the
news all the time.
I mean, Colin Kaepernick, heard of him ever? I couldn't name one quarterback to play at Nevada.
Maybe pick a different position.
He was a beast at Nevada, too.
But, I mean, pick a different school, a different position, something. Like, what? He's one of the most, like, notable quarterbacks. Especially, I was speechless. I was like, he didn't just say that. At first,
I can name one.
At first, I thought it was a joke. But then he didn't ever, like, throw the punchline in there. I was like, wow, we are paying these. Someone's paying these people. Just remember that. But yeah, so obviously bad game for Purdue, good game for Rondale. I'll tell you the other kid that I watched, I watched a half, was the kid Jacob Panushik.
Jakob, my guy.
Jakob. He's defensive end for Michigan State. He had a game. Beast. Three tackles for loss, two QB hurries, two first forced fumbles. Not a explosive win over Tulsa, but 28-7, they won pretty handily, and he had a game. So I would be so excited if Mark D'Antonio can have a Mark D'Antonio-esque defense this year, because he has been lacking it. The Big Ten has missed it. It's time to have that back. So those are our top performers of the week in the Midwest. Obviously, Notre Dame Louisville tonight, so we look for some Notre Dame-men to make that list moving forward. But overall, the Big Ten didn't have a horrible day. I'll tell you what, the bottom tier of the Big Ten really played well. Rutgers beat UMass 48-21. You had Penn State. Well, Penn State's not the bottom of the Big Ten, but talk about blowouts. Maryland beat Howard 79-0. Illinois beat Akron 42-3. So some of those lower tiers, if we can get that lower tier of the Big Ten to raise their game, you want to talk about the best conference in college football, you got a chance now. Because you look at the lower tier of the SEC, which we're going to talk about in the Menace to Society show a little bit later, but they did not fare so well.
No.
Now, obviously, we had some, I guess, lack of performances. When you look at like Nebraska only winning 35-21 against South Alabama, and obviously then you had the upsets, right? Or the upset, Purdue losing to Nevada was rough. But I think Wisconsin's win is huge for the conference because USF's not a bad team.
Yeah, I think the conference as a whole really performed well. The top tier, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, they took care of business. They did what they should have done. They weren't perfect, but they did what they needed to do. The middle of the Big Ten, really, there was some, Minnesota was one that was embarrassing, really. I mean, they were certainly almost losing, lost the game.
And they were the kickoff Big Ten game. They were the intro to the conference, and it was like they almost lost to a FCS team. Come on. Yeah. Come on, PJ.
Which nobody in a Big Five or a Power Five conference should ever lose to an FCS team.
Of course not. Well, the one game I think was the most disappointing was the game of the week in the Midwest, Northwestern-Stanford. That was not only disappointing because Northwestern was so bad and their quarterback play was so bad, but it was disappointing because Stanford was so bad.
Yeah.
Both teams were bad.
It was a really boring game to watch.
It was very boring.
And a guy that I really liked on film last year, I talked about him in the offseason, is KJ Costello. He just played average at best. No, he didn't. He played below average.
Yeah.
Hey, but we're going to get into that game at the end of the show. Definitely want to go from here to kind of that's a wrap-up of the Big Ten, the players, and really want to talk about the Buckeyes in week one. So how about the Buckeyes took on the mighty Lane Kiffin Florida Atlantic Owls? And overall, I think it was a decent first game, you know?
Solid, yeah.
I will kind of go through what my opinions are, what I saw that I thought was excellent, what I saw that needs to be improved by week two, because after watching that Cincinnati game, that's a real one. That's not going to be a cakewalk.
They better be ready.
For sure. But, I mean, overall, 469 yards, 7 of 14 on third down, so that's 50%. Not terrible. I think Justin Fields played really well. He actually graded out the highest quarterback in the group of five, the Power Five, in the country. I think his grade was a 90.4, which is extremely high. So he had the highest grade in the country, and then he also had two big drops. KJ had a drop in the first quarter, and Chris Olave had one in the second quarter. So he probably lost, obviously, two completions, but another 80 yards passing. Those were downfield really good throws. He also was 94% completion percentage when he was kept clean. So we'll talk about the O-line a little bit here in a minute, but if this O-line and pass pro can clean up and become a solid aspect for this team, watch out. He was number one in all of college football completing the ball when he was kept clean. So that's going to be the key moving forward. Keep this kid clean, not only because clearly they have no other option at quarterback, but also because he's ridiculous when you give him the space to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I think every Buckeye fan probably cringed a little bit on that first blitz by FAU when Fields really took a big hit and went down on his throwing arm. And, you know, luckily he was fine. You know, that's why they have rib protectors and all that gear to make sure he's okay.
But and that's going to be a part of the new video I'm putting out for Patreon. And I'm going to put one out for Patreon, one for just general public, called Film Forensics, because that's one of the plays that I'm breaking down. Because J.K. Dobbins flat had an MA in protection. And I told you in the preview show, J.K. needs to be better in pass pro. That has to happen. And it didn't happen. I mean, he had a complete bust in pass pro. He bypassed the linebacker that he was supposed to block, and that linebacker hit Justin Fields. That can't happen. Not if we're going to, if Ohio State's going to go out and win the Big Ten, that can't happen. They need a running back that is excellent in pass pro. And that's what they had. That's what Zeke was. That's what Carlos Hyde was. That's what J.K. needs to be for sure. The only real, I guess, negative I could say about Justin Fields is, and it's not a negative. It's the first game of the year. Most quarterbacks, almost every school in the country would kill for a performance like Justin Fields had. So yeah, we're really nitpicking here. But he does need to clean up his timing a little bit. He was late on a couple quick game throws and a movement throw especially a movement throw, like a rollout, that can be disastrous if you're late. I mean, the whole defense is pursuing, and versus a better defense, both of those can be problematic if he doesn't get it fixed. But fortunately, it was FAU. Going through the grades after I watched the film, I thought Justin Fields obviously played extremely well. I thought, you know what? Kudos to Brandon Bowen. I had him grading out at 82% at first game back. That's big time. They need that too. They need that. Jeremy Ruckert, how about him? Unbelievable. I mean, he really burst on the scene, and we're going to talk about some things that need improved especially the tight end position. But 4 catches, 38 yards, 2 touchdowns, graded out at 75%. I mean, that was a really excellent game for him. The other one, Jonah Jackson. So the two new guys on the offensive line essentially graded out the highest on the offensive line. And then Ben Victor and Austin Mack graded out decently high too. Some disappointing, points of need to improve for the Buckeyes. The first and foremost is the offensive line. I wouldn't say an abomination. It wasn't terrible, but Wyatt Davis played very average. Josh Allaby, when he went in the game, was very average in the run game, but Josh Allaby is a very athletic tackle. He graded out really well in pass pro, but when it came to the run game and moving people and being tough, he wasn't there. He didn't show up. But the O-line as a whole did that. You didn't see a ton of just displacement. This is FAU. You should have saw major displacement. And the other thing I saw that was very concerning is there was twice in the first half that we had 7-man pass protection. We kept the tight end and back in, and they had a 3-man rush, and Fields got pressured twice. I mean, just you do the math, that's more than a double team on each guy. Mm-hmm. So we had two Ohio State players on one FAU player across the board, and they still got pressure. Now, schematically, I'm not a huge fan of that because – anytime you have 7-man pro versus 3-man rush, they have a lot of guys in coverage covering your 4 people, right? Really 3 people, because the quarterback's throwing the ball. So you have now you have 8 people covering 3. Hard to get open. So schematically, really hate that package. But I know Kevin Wilson had success with it at Indiana. It's more of a tempo thing usually, but it was not that impressive. And then I know Buckeye fans are just on cloud 9 right now, think we could beat the Patriots. I thought it was an average first game, above average, we'll say. Above average first game. J.K. Dobbins was okay. I mean, 21 carries, 91 yards, 4.3 yards a carry. And like I mentioned in the pass pro, he's still a liability. And we also can't afford fumbles. Come on, first game of the year, and we have a fumble already from J.K. And here's the problem with that. I know we have DeMario McCall, right? Ohio State has DeMario, but that's what killed Mike Weber's career. Not killed it, but that's why he didn't have a better career. He fumbled all the time. And so he saw himself on the bench. The question is going to be, if JK has a fumble issue, if he's not going to hold the ball high and tight like he's supposed to, will Ohio State bench JK Dobbins and make DeMario the guy?
Well, I think if you look at it, DeMario really only touched the ball three times in the game. So he didn't really get as many touches as I thought. If you go by total number of touches, Master Teague looks like the second back.
Yeah, no, but that's because it's a blowout and they're running the clock out in the four-minute offense. I mean, DeMario was the second back. He was the second back in. I mean, Master Teague is a good cleanup guy. He's a good mop-up duty running back. I mean, he runs hard, hits the hole hard. I don't think he's going to be a two. Certainly not a two that Ohio State needs. But we'll see if DeMario's that also. I mean, that's up to be seen, right? I did think I also thought the perimeter blocking was a little sloppy, which again you sometimes have that in a first game. But I think people might take for granted how well the edge was blocked when Urban was there, and I think that needs to be improved majorly. And it will. It'll get an improve, but we're running these perimeter run plays and we need to block the edge, or else they're perimeter run plays where the edge is not blocked well. Those are negative yardage plays and demoralizing, because you have to be able to stretch the defense horizontally in order for the interior run game to work. Right, simple as that. I did think they had some good I really like some of the scheme stuff they did. The cross release by the two tight ends that burst Jeremy Ruckert wide open for a touchdown. And then they did a little schemed up play for Reed cover two, the Bench Victor touchdown. I mean, they were messing with him with KJ in the slot, kind of trying to figure out who's covering KJ, the safety or corner. They're trying to read it, and then ends up the safety doesn't have enough depth and Ben's just wide open. I love that. And I think one of the biggest one thing that Ohio State fans need to watch out for moving forward is what happened to Ohio State after they kind of exploded in the first half.
After the first 28 points.
After the first quarter. Yeah. FAU obviously made some adjustments. Ohio State obviously was kind of getting production that was higher than their performance. Mm-hmm. They had a couple big plays, couple pop plays. You know, Justin Fields pop a 51-yard run. You had Ben Victor wide open. You had Jeremy Ruckert wide open. So after they got those adjustments down, the one thing they started doing that really gave Ohio State problems is they started adding their boundary corner into the run fits. Both in a post-snap squeeze and also a few corner blitzes, and Ohio State did not handle it well. This will continue to resurface now. After what I watched on film, every defense, you watch Cincinnati, will do the same thing, because everyone's a copycat in college football. They see something that we did all the time on offense. You see something that works, and you're like, oh, we need to do that. And then all of a sudden, you put it in for that week. So you're going to see these teams adding the boundary corner in the run fit quite a bit now, until we can either block it with the receiver or the offensive line starts seeing it and accounting for it. And that's going to be a major thing that defenses are going to do to Ohio State until they show they can manage it. And it should be a major point of emphasis moving forward for Kevin Wilson and really Greg Sudarawa. And I'll tell you another thing. I saw Darren Lee actually mentioned it on Twitter. How about the Buckeyes going under center? Under center with the fields, man.
That was I know that made a lot of fans happy.
Well, I love it. I think it's something that I know Ryan wanted to do for the last 2 years, and it's never got around to doing it, really committing to it at least, especially with Dwayne. He wanted to do it. But that's something that it does so much for the offense, and it does take an element of the quarterback read run game stuff out of it. But at the end of the day, it is kind of nice to have a back sit at 7 yards at the top of what would be an eye and just roll downhill and take a handoff, right? The other thing it did, I mean, you watched the Chris Olave touchdown where he just absolutely made the corner look ridiculous, flipped him around in circles. He kind of gave a go route or fade route stem and then snapped off a post, spun the corner around. But that happened. That whole thing was wide open. I mean, Chris Olave did a great job handling the corner. But you watch Justin Fields take a snap under center, turn his back to the defense, present the ball, the running back rolls over it. The whole defense is like 3 yards from the line of scrimmage. And now Justin Fields pops up and it's just Chris Olave, 35 yards downfield by himself. And it's just beautiful. The hard play action you can have under center is awesome. And we already talked about it. I think the JK bust and pass pro where Olave or Chris or where Justin Fields took a shot and then Olave dropped the ball. One, I was really impressed with Justin Fields on that play. I mean, he has a guy unblocked at the running back M8 and didn't block, and all of a sudden now he's letting the ball loose and really puts it on the money to Chris Olave with a guy barreling down in his face. That was really impressive to me. Another thing that I saw was too many sloppy blocking schemes up front. Saw several clips of poor landmarks, poor aiming points, footwork that needs cleaned up. You even watch, if you go back and watch Justin Fields' 51-yard run, you'll see Thayer Mumford, he is on the left, he's playing left tackle, right? This is quarterback zone to the left. His only job is to not get beat to the right. That's it. Like the offensive line calls it inside V. He's got to take the block off on the guy's inside V of his neck. And as long as he keeps that guy on his left, he did his job. Like he could literally fall down. And as long as that defender doesn't cross his face, he did his job. And he still got cross-faced. And you watch it. Thank God Fields can run. Because that guy would, I mean, it was almost a trip-up tackle. And you're like, come on, Thayer. That's an easy block, man. You have hard blocks and easy blocks. That's an easy block. That's an effort block. So that was, as a whole, the whole game, that was a little concerning. And then it shows how fickle college football is. I mean, 28-0, just absolutely rolling. Second and three on the 22-yard line in the red zone. And Chris Olave gets called for a clear push-off PI that was so unnecessary. And now momentum was shot, right? And I think that was the turning point where you saw FAU kind of changed what they were doing. They adjusted. And then you also saw the momentum kind of die down. It never really shifted, obviously, but it died down a little bit. But I thought as a whole, the offense played well. But I think the story of the game really was the different identity on defense. I haven't seen that in the horseshoe in probably 10 years.
Yeah, the defense definitely looked a lot better than I thought.
And you know what? I hope that they were being very vanilla because it was FAU.
It could be just FAU. And,
well,
I don't know.
We'll find out this week because, I mean, the one thing I will say is I'm not a fan of, let's put it this way. I love the bail corner stuff they were doing where the corner lines up pressing bails or plays off. And I love cover three also because of the way they're coaching cover three nowadays, it's a hard coverage to beat. And that's obviously going to be a mainstay, like a staple of this defense. But I will say this, if that is how we're going to play, if that's how Ohio State's going to play the rest of the year, be prepared for little easy completions for minimal yards.
Just small checkdowns.
Yeah, I mean,
they're open.
There was a handful, like just throwing hitches out to the flats because that's a voided area, right? And, in my opinion, bail and off coverage, it should be a changeup if you're Ohio State. If you have Jeff Okuda playing corner, to have him play off bail every snap is just absolutely idiotic.
You have so much talent out there that you just are underutilizing if
you
just do that.
And I'm sure they're not going to. I'm sure this is just playing their base defenses against FAU. And they're going to get out of it. And now they get to go play Cincinnati and throw some wrinkles at them, throw some curveballs. And I'd like to see a little more press. Overall, I really like the defensive performance. I'll tell you what I love is Malik in the middle. At middle linebacker.
Oh, yeah.
Malik Harrison at middle linebacker was awesome. And then you look at the breakdown of snaps. Here's what I saw. Here's what the defensive staff told me from how they played. Pete Warner, they love him. Played 57 snaps, the most of all linebackers. So there's a lot of conversation about should Pete be in there. Their answer is yes, he should. And then you look at Tuff Borland. There's a lot of conversation about him. And I know we talked about Al Washington kind of bowing up for his guy. Tuff Borland played 34 snaps and Baron Browning played 34 snaps. So they're splitting time. We could say Tuff's the guy. They're splitting time right now at that other linebacker spot. The one that's not splitting much time is Pete Warner. And then Taraja played 23 snaps. So they're getting guys in there. I know it was FAU, but the clear battle right here to me is Baron and Tuff Borland. Because although people are calling for Baron Browning, he had 4 targeted throws in the game, 4 receptions for 55 yards. So everyone wants to talk about Tuff can't run. Put in Baron, he's a better athlete. He did not cover well against FAU at all. And he graded out at 58%. So let's calm down on the bench, Tuff, put Baron in. Because right now, Tuff is the best option from what I saw on that film. Now, I'm not saying Tuff is a great option. I'm saying he's the best option. And we need to get more out of Baron Browning and Taraja Mitchell. Because Taraja didn't grade out that well either. But the highest rated linebacker was Tuff Borland. I mean, he graded out at 71%. He graded higher than Pete, Taraja, Barron. I'd take that back. Malik. Malik graded out like 77. But, I mean, of the linebackers in contention, right? But the defense as a whole, I mean, here's what you saw. Jeff Okuda is special. And you better enjoy him for 4 more months.
He's definitely a top draft
because pick. That's all you got.
Right. He's probably top 10.
It's like the owners of the Indians said about Francisco Lindor. Like, just listen.
Enjoy him while he's here.
He ain't going to be here much longer. Just enjoy him while he's here because he is special, man. He is special.
Well, yeah, I think we talked about it on the preview show or several times through the offseason about Jeff Okuda. I mean, he is, when I watch him, he reminds me of a Denzel Ward, Greedy Williams, right? Like that type of corner. Yeah. And he has a chance to be the next big thing out of Ohio State's defensive backfield.
CBU.
Yeah. And you know what? I haven't watched the entire country yet, but I've been able to evaluate probably, 15 games so far, week one, and I'll probably watch a couple more here in the next couple days. But what I've seen, the two best corners I've seen are CJ Henderson at Florida and then Jeff Okuda at Ohio State. The biggest difference is both are similar in coverage, both are long, both are fluid, both can run, both are blanket cover corners. The difference is Okuda will come and make contact. He'll tackle you, and that's so huge.
That's what I saw just this week. I thought he was like a lot like Greedy, but then now looking at him, he's more Denzel Ward.
Well, because he'll come up and hit you just like Denzel will.
And Greedy does not do that.
And so, you know what? I'll tell you what, the most impressive thing that I watch for is when he does it, he gets up with attitude. Like, he wants to do it. Yep. He's not doing it because he has to do it. He wants to make that tackle. He wants to take out your kneecaps and flip you over. He wants to come up and make those plays. And that was so he played. You better enjoy him for the next 12 games or whatever it is, because that's about the end.
You think he could probably sit out the bowl game too?
Oh, well, I mean, depends on the bowl.
If it's not the playoff.
Depends.
That's a bizarre, random thing to bring up.
Well, I'm just saying.
I mean, he's not going to sit out the bowl game unless they end up losing 3 games and go to a shitty bowl. Then I would sit out too. I'll tell you, you know, the other guy that only played 17 snaps on defense was Brennan White, which was really surprising to me. He played 17 snaps on defense and graded out 79%, the fourth highest grade on the defense. And so I don't know if it was there was a reason for that, but I'd like to see more of Brennan White. But the other storyline here that is, I mean, it was predicted, it was said to be this way, but the defensive line was ridiculous. I mean, out of the top 7 players, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are defensive linemen. Top 7 grades, 4 D linemen.
Well, you knew Chase Young would be looking good out there.
Yeah, knew he was a monster.
Yeah, and he's going to have his day.
And Chase Young graded out at like the 6th, 5th best on defense. Yeah, exactly. The guy that was so impressive to me was Jayshon Cornell. He graded out 89%, and he was a monster. I mean, those zone reads, those reverse zone reads, or whatever you want to call them, with the jet sweep reads, he was taking away both all game and just tracking people down. So he played outstanding. Him and B.B. Landers were the 2 highest grades, and they played outstanding.
Yeah, I was going to say, I saw a lot of B.B., so I know he had to grade out pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, he graded out really high. And the overall kind of analysis, I think this – going back to the off coverage and the soft coverage, the Ohio State starting corners were targeted in coverage 12 times, right? So that means the ball was thrown to their guy 12 times, and there was 9 receptions. That just shows you the minimal amounts of contested throws, right? Because they only got 46 yards on those 9 receptions. That's 5 yards a catch, and that's that's what Ohio State's going to do, then you have to be prepared for that. There's going to be some easy throws. There's going to be some little things that happen, some easy completions. But I would imagine they will start changing it up a little bit moving forward as we start getting into the meat of the Big Ten schedule. The two things that I saw on special teams that I think are critical is, one is 3-point stances on punt return. I don't know if people even ever noticed that, paid attention to that, but we used to – when I was at Ohio State, we were dominant in punt return and punt block, and we were a 3-point stance operation. That meant that there was a threat of rushing the punt every snap, and then Kerry Combs and Greg Schiano decided to change it. Must have been 3 years ago, and then it was a complete fall off in production. I mean, the punt team knew that no one was rushing because they were in 2-point stances. There was this mirror cornerback technique bullshit, and all of a sudden, guys are running down free, and we couldn't return a punt. What you saw in this game was 3-point stances across the board. The threat of rush. I mean, I loved it. And you saw great hold up. the punt return team could be something special if we get a special guy catching the punt. I mean, DeMario, obviously, you could tell he was dinged up. He wasn't running well. But I think that'll he'll develop and get healthy and maybe be that guy. But we need a dynamic returner. The other thing you saw on special teams is we cannot kick off worth a shit. I've said I was worried about it all the last month, and I'll say it again. We are 102nd in America on our kickoff hang times and length. We cannot kick the ball off. And we don't know if we can kick field goals because it was just a blowout. Yeah. We just kicking extra points.
Didn't need to.
Yeah. I am concerned about the kicker situation, but I love the punt return. Again, though, overall, I think it was a quality first game. I mean, there's obviously always going to be things in the first game that you need to clean up. But I think the biggest thing that I saw and heard on social media, and even when I watched some of the post-game reports, it's one, overinflation of how well they played in the first quarter, and two, an over-deflation of how bad it dropped off. Because college football is so momentum-oriented. That is the name of the game. And you start getting a couple explosive plays, all of a sudden you're rolling downhill on somebody. All you need is one thing or two things in succession to happen, and the whole momentum changes. And like I said, FAU made some good adjustments on defense, but you're up 28-0, second and three in the red zone going in. You get a PI. Now you're backed up 15 yards. The very next play, Justin Fields throws a poorly thrown bubble to Garrett Wilson. Luke Farrell completely whiffs his block. And now it's a fumble FAU ball. Now the whole game is turned. And it's not that, oh, we got conservative in play calling. No, they're calling the same plays.
Yeah,
right. They were calling the same plays until the second half.
I thought right when it was 28-0, I thought it was just going to be 88-0. No, game over.
And I mean, everyone did. That's why there was like this, oh, what happened?
What happened right then?
And of course, it always turns to the coaches started being conservative. Coach is this. It's like, calm.
It's playing trestle ball out there.
I mean, it literally similar play calls. And FAU changed their game plan. I mean, they're hitting these three, you know, max pro isolation shots like Chris Olave's touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then you had the double tight end switch touchdown. I mean, some of these things they're calling, they call them later in the game, but now FAU's dropping eight people in coverage and they're rushing three and getting pressure. Like the play calls weren't that different. But let's not act like we took our foot off the gas. I heard that 50 times from all these analysts. Oh, well, you know, I think Ohio State really took their foot off the gas. No, they didn't. They just didn't execute as well, and FAU changed up what they were doing. FAU
fixed what they were doing wrong.
Their foot was still on the gas. Like, they were pushing the brakes?
Yep.
Oh, they put it in reverse. I got you. Foot off the gas, put it in reverse. Stop it. But that's what happens in college football. And I mentioned before, Luke Farrell needs to play better. He does. He had, like, five missed blocks in the first quarter and a half. And if he doesn't, I hate to break it to you, Jeremy Ruckert's your starting tight end, boys. I don't even know if it's
close.
That's
what it looks like, yeah.
I don't even know if it's close. I mean, Luke Farrell graded out at 52% and 42% in the pass game. And he missed five blocks. So, I mean, and Jeremy Ruckert graded out 75%. You're talking about opposite ends of the offensive grades. So, I'm excited about Jeremy Ruckert. I think he's going to be a really great player. Obviously, Urban made those comments on air, I think it was yesterday or maybe Saturday, that Jeremy Ruckert was the best tight end prospect he's ever recruited, and I agree with that statement. Well, no, I'd actually disagree with that statement entirely. Aaron Hernandez was, yeah, but this kid, Aaron. But as far as a pure tight end, probably,
okay,
like a guy that might actually put his face on a six technique,
yeah, defensive end. Yeah, not just a big wide receiver.
Which is what Hernandez was, that's an exciting thing. I think Buckeye fans should be fired up about Ruckert, and we need better out of Luke Farrell for sure. So overall, I think good week for the Buckeyes. Good week one for the Buckeyes. I'll tell you, the disappointing game for the Midwest and the Big Ten had to be the Northwestern-Stanford game. I mean, that was an abomination of what should have been a great game.
Northwestern just looked awful.
Well, you know who looked awful really is Hunter Johnson.
Hunter Johnson, for sure.
And we talked about him, the most highly touted, highest-ranked quarterback to ever play for Pat Fitzgerald, transfers in from Clemson, and he played horrific.
I'll tell you what, Clemson does not miss him.
No, they don't. And there's no secret as to why Trevor Lawrence beat him out. Yeah. But just when I watched the game, I broke down the film. I mean, he was throwing the ball late. He was making misreads, inaccurate as all get out. I mean, he had a QBR, listen to this, a four. A four.
Four.
I don't know if that... Like, not like four attempts. Like, his QB rating was a four.
A four.
Like, we just talked about earlier in the show, Shea Patterson's was a 152 or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a four.
Yeah, I think the scale goes from like zero to 160 or something like that, right around that. So, Shea Patterson, pretty close to perfect. Hunter Johnson, pretty close to as bad as possible.
Just as bad as you could be.
As bad as you could be. So his overall grade for the game was a 39%. And to be honest, I think the most disappointing part was his counterpart. KJ Costello had a 47% grade. And I mean, he didn't play well either. And he's supposed to be a top 10 quarterback in the country.
Well, KJ Costello, he got injured in like the second quarter, I believe.
Right. But
I wonder how bad that injury is.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah. It was just a very lackluster game. Northwestern played terrible. I mean, they 5 of 14 on third down. That's a little over 33%. You're not going to win a game if you don't convert on money downs and you don't protect the ball. They had four turnovers and 33% on third down. You can't win the game that way. You just can't.
And I think if you really look at the game, what I'm curious to find out as the season goes on is, are both teams' defenses good enough to make the offense this bad, or are these offenses this bad? I mean, you look at Isaiah Bowser, who's one of the better backs in the Big Ten, only 10 carries, 54 yards, just over 5 yards a carry. And then Cameron Scarlett for Stanford only averaged 4 yards a carry. So the run defense was decent. But I don't know how good either of these teams are.
Yeah, I worried about Northwestern trying to run the ball on Stanford's front anyways, but and so that wasn't that surprising to me. The one thing, I'll tell you who played really exceptional for Stanford, and Northwestern didn't have a skill player that could play at this level, was the corner they have, Paulson Adebo. He shut down everyone he covered. I mean, whoever he was on, and granted, he was covering a bunch of average players, but he had 37 snaps in coverage, only 5 targets, so that most of the time they were so covered they didn't throw it to him. And then when they did throw it to him 5 times, there was 1 catch for 7 yards. And he also had 2 PBUs and an interception that was a freaky interception if you saw it, but it goes back to Hunter Johnson throwing the ball late. But he actually shut them all down. And Northwestern just didn't have the skill. They didn't. And what really is scary, you talk about a bad defense, Northwestern, if you look at their entire defense, player by player, and how they graded out, their entire secondary graded out outside of their top 15 defensive performers. So they had 15 players that graded out higher on that defense than anyone in their secondary. And that's terrible, because you look at the stats, Stanford didn't even throw the ball that well. That's a bad, bad deal. And what a bad game. I mean, it was miserable. The first quarter, 0-0, it ends. I'm like, wow. This is bad ball. And then Stanford puts up 10 points to go in 10-0 at half. And I was sitting here like, this might be 10-0, might be the final score.
That might be it.
And then it was 10-0 after the third quarter. I was like, I think it really might be.
Yeah, I talked to Peepaw a little bit about this game, because obviously he he had Northwestern getting 3.5. Mm-hmm. He was not very happy with the end of that game, where the sack fumble that the O-lineman missed the ball in the end zone. So then they got a touchdown to go up 10. Really screwed him.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what happens. That's isn't that crazy? That's how it works.
That's Vegas. For you.
It's in the bag. We got it.
Vegas
knew
about it.
They're down by 3. Game's about to end. I got 3.5, and then boom, touchdown, fluke play. It's over. And that happened a number of things with the over under at Ohio State. I know there was a late field goal that changed that one. but overall, I think this was the most disappointing aspect of the Midwest football this week, was just the fact that Northwestern couldn't even play halfway decent. Like, you're looking at a lower to middle tier Big Ten team against a middle to slightly upper tier Pac-12 team. So just make it a game. Like, play competitive, make it entertaining, and give the Big Ten a good reputation, right? You look at that game, should have been similar to the Auburn-Oregon game. Now, those two teams are not near the level of Auburn-Oregon, but similar matchups, right? Yep. Similar comparative matchup, and it just wasn't, and it was just a shame. But I will tell you, that was a good week one. Glad we got that under our belt. Really excited about week two. I know there's some big games. I don't want to say big games. It's similar week to week one. I know Ohio State has a much bigger test with Cincinnati coming to town. Really excited to break down Cincinnati's film from their big win over UCLA, and really jump into that on later in the week when we do our preview show, and see about this matchup. This will be the first. We said it in the off season. A lot of people have been talking about it. This is when we're going to find out how quick we can progress the offensive line at Ohio State, how quickly that happens. And there's another couple, handful of decent games. Maryland, Syracuse should be a decent game. Vanderbilt, Purdue might be a decent game if Purdue can get it together. But really, really excited about moving forward and getting into some more conference matchups, bigger matchups. Definitely want to encourage you to check out our Patreon. We're going to have some video content coming out early this week, kind of breaking down the Ohio State game on video, talking about what happened, what really happened. Kind of like I said all along with these shows, is this is going to be under the hood, behind the scenes. I'm going to tell you what a coach sees, not what some analyst sees that their intern handed them on a notepaper. I'm going to tell you what happened in these games and some key plays. And so that stuff's, we're going to do a national one that's going to be put out to the public, but I'm going to really dive deep into some of these Midwest games for Patreon subscribers every week. So make sure you check that out and check out our patreon.com/Menace to Society Podcast. And we've had a number of advertisers and sponsors reach out in the last month, and we're working through that. So if you're interested, make sure you contact us at sponsorship@MenaceToSocietyPodcast.com. And ultimately, we appreciate your support. The feedback's unbelievable. We're going to do a Beyond the Show episode this week. We've been a couple weeks off getting ready for the three-show platform, but now that we're pumped and prepared for that, we're going to drop a Beyond the Show episode later this week. And also check out our merch store. Like I mentioned on social media, the Devil Horns Down shirt came in, and they came in on Friday, I think it was, or Saturday. And so those are packaged up. They will be shipped out tomorrow. So if you are going to the LSU game and want to wear this ambiguous shirt, make sure you get your order in today or tomorrow, or else it might not get there on time for the game day set. But thanks for supporting us. Check out our store on our website, and we'll see you later in the week.
Gil Elliott, and he's got an opening. Elliott, off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown, 85 yards.
It's so easy to be average. It takes a little something to be special, Don. It takes a little something special to be a great player.
Braxton Miller's loose. Spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
We don't want to coach average. I don't want to be around you. Why be around average?
We're going inside him. We're going outside him. Inside him, outside him. And when we get him on the run once, we're going to keep him on the run. And we're not going to pass unless our secondary comes up too close. But don't forget, man, we're going to get him on the run. We're going to go, 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 go. And we aren't going to stop until we go to that goal line. Don't forget, man, today's the day we're going to win.
Menace to...